and welcome to Ask the Mayor on WBAA. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Thanks for being with us. My guest this week, speaking to us from his office in Crawfordsville, is Mayor Todd Barton, and we'd love to have your questions for him during our next half hour. You can call those in at area code 765-496-1999. Send an email to ask at WBAA.org or tweet your question at WBAA News on Twitter. Mr. Mayor, good afternoon to you. Nice to talk to you again.
Good afternoon. Good to be here.
So let's start with this discussion you're having with the folks at Walmart. Can you tell us a little bit about that situation and how it came to be?
Well, we've been involved in a process for the last 3+ years to connect the current private road that runs into the Walmart complex, located on US 231, to connect that over to State Road 47. It's a joint city-county project. We believe that opening that area up will really alleviate some of the traffic congestion we have and make the area much safer and also open it up to potential development. You know, keeping in mind that we have the Ironman Raceway and some larger venues on the south side. So we've been involved in this process and had been working on Walmart Corporate with that for quite some time. And there was, you know, in the last year and a half been a shift in their position. So we've been trying to negotiate acquiring that private road and making that connection. And, you know, it's been a bumpy road, negotiating with a large corporation like that that's headquartered a few states away is not easy. But, you know, I'm convinced that we're making some good progress. We had a good face-to-face meeting Monday afternoon. And we've had some ongoing discussions since then. So I hope to have some news to take to the public in the next week or so.
What is Walmart asking of you exactly?
Well, that's varied depending on the point in the negotiations. But you know, the important thing is that they started out. This street was designed to be dedicated to become a city street, and at some point in these negotiations, had switched and did not want to participate in the project and keep that private street private and really operate that as a kind of a dead end into the facility. So, we've negotiated price. We've been back and forth on what that would cost. We've looked at the options of, you know, eminent domain and a condemnation case. Looked at several different options there. Walmart's brought several concerns to the table. We've worked to alleviate those concerns, such as increased traffic and increased traffic speeds, those kinds of things. But I think we're getting through, so it's tough to negotiate with a large corporation like that.
Do you feel at all like this is a little bit of a bait and switch, like Walmart started to say one thing and is now doing a separate thing?
Well, I don't know that I would call it a bait and switch. I think in a large corporation like that, it's often difficult for them to coordinate with themselves what they're doing, and I think when you see, as we did, a change in personnel, so part of the way through this, there was a change with the people we were working with on the Walmart side, and it just went a totally different direction. So, we've had very good response and dialogue with Walmart's representatives here in Indiana, including their local representatives. For them, this project makes perfect sense. The challenge has come in dealing with the folks located in Bentonville, Arkansas. Trying to have someone look at this project on Google Earth from several states away, it might not make sense to them, but it makes perfect sense to everyone who's here.
How have you tried to convey to the Walmart executives, especially as you've gone from talking with one person to talking with others, about the on-the-ground realities of this so that they don't see it from that literal and figurative 30,000-foot view?
Well, we've had, I think, good discussion in which we've explained the challenges that we have and what we're trying to do. We've also conveyed that in writing a few times, when I say a lot of dialogue, I mean a lot of dialogue has gone back and forth. So it's still just hard to explain to someone unless they're here with their feet on the ground in this community, how this really works and what we're really talking about doing. So that has been tough, and we're hoping right now that, you know, Walmart's people within Indiana who've been here and are here and look at this and understand this are able to convince their counterparts in Arkansas.
When you have a conversation like this with a large corporation that is a significant investor and a significant job creator in your community, do you ever think about, well, what happens if I honk them off so much that they're like, I don't care about the Crawfordsville facility anymore? I mean, is that ever in the back of your mind?
Well, you certainly weigh those things out, and I think Walmart is an interesting case for us because we're not merely talking about a retail store in our community. Walmart also operates some other large facilities in our community, prescription medication facility, optometry facility. So there's some other facilities that employ, quite frankly, several hundred people in good-paying jobs in our community. So, you know, you do have to weigh that into the equation, and we're not out to, you know, in a sense, honk anybody off. We just want to negotiate what we think is a fair deal all the way around, and at the end of the day, I have to be able to justify what I'm doing to the taxpayers of this community, and that's the stance that I take and the position I take as we move through these negotiations.
I guess what I'm getting at is, who do you feel like has the leverage in this situation? You, because you represent the people and you represent things like tax breaks, or them, because they are such a large investor and they've already invested millions of dollars in the community? I mean, does one side have more leverage than the other?
Well, I think anytime I go into negotiations, I like to think I have more leverage. But, you know, in this particular case, you know, particularly where we are right now, I think the city is sitting in a position that, you know, the part of this new road has already been constructed by the county. So that part of the project is happening. It's over and done, and it just is what it is. If Walmart at this point chooses not to participate in this project, they really end up harming themselves because they will be shut off from the new area of development. So from that perspective, I think that we are probably sitting in a stronger position because this is happening. And if their primary concern, you know, is competition, and they've certainly not said that, but if their primary concern is competition, the new roadway is there and competition will happen whether or not they're involved in this project or not.
Is this a situation where either the city or the county could use a legal remedy like eminent domain or something like that to acquire the land you're looking for and just build this project absent any input from Walmart?
That is one possibility that's on the table and has been on the table for quite some time. And, you know, I'm not a big fan of utilizing that process if we don't have to. But keeping in mind as well that if we do follow that process, we will need to, you know, compensate Walmart for the value of the road and all those kind of things. I think people have this idea that government can just come in and take someone's property, and you can't do that. You need to compensate them for that, and I hope to negotiate a resolution that allows me to spend much less tax money than going down that path.
County Commissioner Phil Bain was quoted in one of your local papers recently as saying that he and the rest of the board were just waiting for you to get this deal done. Is that fair of him to say?
Yeah, I think it's fair. You know, I mean, they've worked on the piece that's in the county, and the part that lies within the city, which includes the Walmart section, is clearly on my desk and something I need to get worked out. And, you know, we're always very successful with negotiations and bringing people to the table. This particular case has just proven to be very challenging, and I've said all along, you know, we have all these discussions and all this dialogue, but until this week, we had not had a face-to-face meeting, and I've said all along, if I just get me in the room with these folks and let's walk through this and work through this, and I think we can get there, and that's exactly what's happened. So I think it's fair of him to say that it's on my desk. That's accurate.
Do you think the Walmart officials following that face-to-face meeting saw this project in a different light or saw it as less abstract than they had been viewing it beforehand?
Well, our meeting was with the Indiana piece of Walmart, and I think they viewed the project favorably from the start. There was just, you know, a lack of communication, I think, on their side between their corporate people and their people here in Indiana. So I think we've closed that loop. I'm sure we have, and they're, you know, the ball's in their court right now. They're having internal discussions, and I expect to hear from them probably the end of this week or first of next week, and we'll kind of go from there. But I am confident now that we are on the right path, and I've not been able to say that until this week.
This is Ask the Mayor on WBAA. We're talking today with Crawfordsville Mayor Todd Barton, and we'd love to have your questions. Call those in to area code 765-496-1999. Email ask@wbaa.org or tweet your questions at WBAA News on Twitter. On to other things, what did you make of a report that came back to you recently showing that changes to the farm property tax structure, which were engineered by State Senator Brant Hirschman up here and others last legislative session, could actually mean something like $750,000 fewer dollars in revenue for your city annually starting sometime in the next 5 years. How did that strike you in terms of thinking about future budgeting?
Well, it's very concerning. We hired an accounting group to come in and kind of parse those numbers out and make some predictions for us. And I asked that they present that to the city council, you know, not to really sound alarms yet, but to get them thinking and to help them understand how the dynamics are changing. But we know that as we move forward in the next few years, we need to think about some things. We need to think about local option income tax and some of those issues and how we approach this. And, you know, whether or not the taxation on the farm ground was fair and whether or not the change is fair, I'm not really sure. But I do know that we have to understand it and we have to be prepared to deal with the ramifications.
Speaking of the local option income tax, or LOIT as it's sometimes called, you already have one, but you're not all the way up to your full levy yet. Have there been preliminary discussions about what it might mean to increase the amount of local option income tax you collect?
Absolutely. You know, that was presented to the county council and it was presented to the city council. So, I think they're thinking about those things. They're looking at it. But my sense right now is that there's nothing on the horizon where either body is going to initiate any kind of proposal to increase that in the foreseeable future. But I think it is something that they are looking at down the road so that they understand if push comes to shove, they might have to make a change there.
So you think you may just have to swallow whatever budget decreases this creates?
Well, I've said all along, you know, we have to become more and more efficient, and I think we're doing that. That helps offset some of this, but we may have to make some restrictions down the road and change some things. But, you know, we're looking down the road, and a lot of things change between now and then. And my goal is to improve that assessed value in our community. I think if you really focus on that, you'll see the revenue remain flat or, you know, maybe even rise if we increase investment and increase that assessed value, because you increase the overall tax base.
And as I tell people about this program all the time, nothing happens in a vacuum. And what you're describing is actually what's going on in the city of West Lafayette. They have been able to reduce their tax rate just slightly because they wound up with something like $90 million extra dollars in assessed value year over year. And so they were able to keep their tax rates at about where they are and maintain their revenue as well. Let me ask you a general question about taxing. One of the things the legislature has brought up in the last few years is at least talking about, and they haven't really made any significant moves in this direction, talking about the idea of not just counties being able to levy local taxes, which is mostly the way it goes now, but cities being able to do the same thing. Is that something you would be in favor of at least having the option of doing?
I think we should give communities the option to look at those issues. And you have to keep in mind that every community is in a different situation and the dynamics are different. And really, the demand for services is different. Some communities want very little, and other communities are wanting more. And I think you should give the locals that kind of option. I always cringe when I see the state trying to be big brother and watch over everybody and really restrict what happens in the smaller communities. We should give those communities the ability to decide if they want those taxes or not. And if a group is in power and they institute those, I'm sure the voters in that community will remove them the next time around.
When the income tax circuit breakers were passed in about 2008, the Daniels administration at that time was touting the fact that those would be phased in over several years and cities would allow themselves a few years to get used to this lower amount of revenue, then that revenue stream would eventually plateau off. It would just happen at a lower level than it had been. I'm curious now, 8 years into that process, based on the fact that we're still having to do things like change the farm property tax structure, since the circuit breakers have gone in, have you seen continually decreasing revenue, or has it at some point leveled off?
Well, we've seen it continuously decrease. Now, the last, you know, 2 or 3 years have been kind of interesting because our revenue has fluctuated a little bit. And you know, we obviously our budgets are much smaller than they were at one time and probably should have shrank. But, you know, for example, this year, you were just talking about assessed value. Our assessed value shot up $40 million. Largely because of investment that had happened in local industry. So when you see that kind of offsets some of that. But we're in a relatively stable situation here in the city of Crawfordsville and in a strong financial situation. But we're always trying to look out 5 years, 4 years, 5 years, 10 years down the road. And some of that, some of those predictions are quite frankly a little scary. But the property tax caps themselves have proven to be, I think, probably both a blessing and a curse. You know, they did force communities to really step up and become efficient. That is for sure. And they give people some peace of mind. But they're also a huge, huge challenge in local government. I was addressing a group, a few weeks ago, and they were clamoring for some changes to some things here in the city. And they said, just do the work and put a few more cents on our taxes. Well, you can't do that, So if I'm going to spend $1 million over here on a project, I need to cut $1 million from something else. I mean, the pie is only so big, and that's all there is to it. And that gets critically important in issues like employee health care. You can't just take double-digit increases every year and pass it on to the customer. It doesn't work in what we're doing with tax caps.
Well, let's talk about the idea of salaries and bonuses and benefits and things like that. You have proposed a 3% raise for city employees for the coming year, based on the fact that your numbers look like they're going to stay flat or go down just slightly based on the taxing structure. How difficult is it going to be to find money for that 3% raise?
Well, we're in a good situation for next year. I mean, we don't see any problems with what we're doing, and looking into 2017 and really 2018, I think we're pretty solid. So we knew we needed to make an adjustment there, and my original proposal was to increase public safety by 3% and all the other in-city employees by 1%. But it became apparent as we moved through that process that that was not something the city council had the stomach to move forward with. So we ended up doing a 3% across the board for all employees, and we value our employees. They're extremely important, and we expect them to be out there every day doing the best they can do, and they really do live up to that. So we wanted to make sure we keep them on board in this very competitive marketplace. The labor market in our community is very, very tight, and we don't want to lose our employees to, and then have people out there working who are not doing as good a job. And when you get to talking about public safety, and I've said this before, you want the best police officers, firefighters, and paramedics you can have out there.
I got to believe that the people who are not public safety employees were not quite happy about the idea of them getting potentially a 1% raise and public safety getting 3%. Did you field any calls of people going, why are we getting, treated this way?
I heard from them.
I'll bet
you did. I heard from them. That's a fair thing, and they know that I will always listen. And my response to them was simply that, everyone is important and everybody's doing a great job. I have to direct what resources we have to the problem areas, and we're not losing employees thus far in our other departments. But in public safety, I laid out the statistics, and we've been losing firefighters, police officers, at an alarming rate, and that is a problem area that we needed to address. But that, like I said, that proposal didn't seem to go far with the council, and we ended up going to 3% across the board.
Where are you losing those police and fire workers to?
Well, it's been interesting. For many years, we were losing them to other departments that paid better, and now what we see with the dynamics that are currently happening, police officers, the ones that we've lost in the last few years are just basically getting out of the line of work. They've just take a look at the news every day and the stressful situation that they're in. And our police department is very, very busy, very high call volume. So, you just see them leaving the industry. And I had the statistics. I don't have them in front of me. But I think all but one had just gotten out of it in the last few years. Our firefighters, we see them leaving, going to higher paying departments. And that's been kind of spread around, the Indianapolis metro area. Some have even gone farther. And then, of course, we always deal with the issue of losing firefighters to, Lafayette, West Lafayette, and Purdue.
What will it cost you to give that 3% across-the-board raise to everybody?
I don't have that number in front of me. One of the things that struck the council, the difference between a 3-1 split and a 3 across the board was like $40,000. So I think for them it was, why are we going to fight this fight for $40,000? But I think all said, my guess is maybe, and this is without looking at the numbers, maybe $180,000 probably to do the raises.
We've got about 10 minutes left with Crawfordsville Mayor Todd Barton today on Ask the Mayor here on WBAA. That means you have 10 minutes left to call in your questions at 765-496-1999. Send emails to ask@wbaa.org or tweet your questions at WBAA News on Twitter. Well, let's try to get to a positive money story here for a second. You and I were talking last month when you were in studio about the fact that the Taste of Montgomery County and the annual Pro Motocross race were happening on the same weekend in your community. Do you have any way to quantify how much economic impact that weekend had on the city?
We don't have a way to directly quantify that, and that's one of the things I've asked the Visitors Bureau and the Visitors Commission to work on, really creating a mechanism to do that. But we do know that all of the events that weekend were very successful. We did have a festival in the downtown on the Friday night that we struggled with a little bit. It was very well organized and had a lot of events, but the weather didn't really cooperate. It kind of rained off and on, so that kind of hurt that event. And we're already looking at how we make changes to that for next year. But other than that, the crowds were amazing at all the events. Saturday night with the Taste, the weather was perfect, and everything looked to be very successful, but we don't have an exact measure. And I'm hoping as we move forward, we'll be able to do that.
I got to thinking about the way that Wabash College's new class interfaces with your designs for downtown, especially as they relate to Stellar. And the class of 2020 has recently come to campus. And I was wondering, what do you think you need, perhaps as an alum yourself, from the campus and from the people who have just begun their college career there as you try to transform the city and the way especially the downtown looks and the way it connects to the campus over the next 4 years? I mean, what do you need from the students themselves?
Well, I had the chance to speak to the incoming freshmen, and I told them they are in an interesting place at just the right time. They're going to be part of this transformation. And we need several things from them. We need them to be, number one, be involved in this community, be engaged in the process, and not to just view this as coming to Wabash College and staying within the confines of the campus, but to get out in the community and get involved in organizations and really help us move through trying to become a more appealing place to young people. So that's the first step that really needs to happen. And then, you know, President Hess has done a nice job there of creating programs that put the students into the nonprofits and the various organizations and government, and they really need to take some ownership there and make these projects appealing to their demographic as we move forward. So there are several things they can do. You know, there's a lot of volunteer activity that comes out of the college. I'm not sure it's been as focused as we would like it to be, and I think that's evolving and changing as well.
What can the campus do to get people to move out into the community a little bit more? I assume the same thing is true in Crawfordsville as it is in Greencastle with the two college campuses, where the campuses themselves can be a little bit insulating and it can be difficult, especially if a student doesn't have a car, to get out into the community and really engage with the outlying city. Are you seeing that there? Would you like more engagement, more exploration from the students?
Yeah, we've always seen that here, and that's something that we've really struggled with. You know, and part of the Stellar projects are designed to start breaking down some of those walls. So when you think about the trail system that will loop through the downtown, it comes through campus into the downtown. I think the Ben Hur Building project will bring students downtown. Fusion 54 is designed to directly pull students off campus and cross that magical divide at US 231. So I think we have a series of things there, but a lot of it is just molding behavior and changing behavior. It's those institutions, it's sometimes hard to change what's always happened, and we understand that. So we just have to entice those students and really offer the things they want to draw them off campus.
While we're on the subject of downtown, I noticed that Crawfordsville Main Street has recently been installing some new bike racks downtown recently. I think they look pretty cool myself. Do you see much bike traffic in town, or would you expect to see more in a city your size under other circumstances?
Well, we see some, not as much as I would like, and I think we will see that dramatically change when the downtown trail is constructed. That will really create the safe environment for people to want to cycle around the community and come downtown and move around. So we're kind of laying the groundwork for that now, and the bike racks are part of that. I saw some people on bikes today, which was kind of neat. But I think it'll grow and grow, and I think it'll get stronger as people feel that biking is accepted and it's important and it's safe.
Do you have a sense of how many bike-dedicated lanes you have painted on city streets in Crawfordsville?
You know, to this point, I don't know that there are any painted on the streets. We've talked about that, and we are working that into our future plans, but I don't think any's happened yet, so-called sharrows and sharing lanes and stuff like that. But certainly as we reconstruct some things, we're going to be looking at doing that and following that bike pedestrian master plan that we created a couple of years ago. But I think the real leap forward is going to be the dedicated trail system, the multi-use trail that starts to circulate around our community. And I've ridden, I ride bike, and I've ridden in communities with the shared lanes and the sharrows. And to a certain degree, they're a leap of faith. You know, I mean, they're better than nothing, but you're kind of on pins and needles, and I don't think a lot of people feel comfortable riding in that situation. So we're looking so forward to the trail system being done, and that's still a couple, 3 years off.
I admit the sharrows, as a sometime bike rider myself, can be a little bit scary. But I think the bike lanes off to the sides of the streets, and you've got some fairly wide streets, especially in downtown there. I think they take up only a couple of feet, and then you have the 3-foot buffer by state law that cars are supposed to have from bicyclists. And so if you assume you've got, say, 5 to 6 feet in on either side or even on one side, would it be difficult to just paint some of those on in the existing infrastructure without having to, you know, do it as you rebuild a road, for instance?
Well, we are going to look at those. And keeping in mind that next year, early next spring, we will be doing a tremendous amount of paving. You know, some of the money that's been released by the state legislature, and we were given an award of additional funding from NDOT, we're going to do about 7 or 8 years worth of street work and paving in 1 year, starting next spring. So we're certainly going to come through and look at everything as we move through that process, but it is a matter of pulling all these departments together and working through, you know, the people with this vision, sharing it with the people who actually paint the lines on the streets and some of those things. So, you know, that process is in the works, and I think we're moving forward with it, and I think we'll see some of those start to appear.
Have you had anyone come to you and say, hey, Mayor, you've talked about how you want to get young professionals into town, and there are a lot of people who want bikeable, walkable communities. Can you do this?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I hear that quite a bit, and I'll be the first to admit that government moves a little too slowly for my taste sometimes, but we're moving them forward and moving those ideas forward, and we'll start to see those things come turn into a reality.
All right. Well, Mr. Mayor, we have unfortunately run out of time on today's program, but we always appreciate your time, and we look forward to doing it again next month.
Thank you very much. Have a good day.
Thanks. Same to you. This has been Ask the Mayor on WBAA. Remember that you can always find these programs archived at our website. That's WBAA.org. They're also in the right-hand column of the page right there on the front. And remember that you can catch our next program 2 weeks from now with West Lafayette Mayor John Dennis. Next week is the fifth Thursday of the month, so we'll be off for that week. But join us again in 2 weeks for John Dennis, and send questions in advance of that program. The email address, ask@WBAA.org. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Support for WBAA comes from your membership and Encompass Credit Union, supporting Ask the Mayor and offering a full line of financial services to the people of Clinton and Tipton counties while supporting the communities they serve. More information at EncompassCU.org.